I need you here on my mind every hour of the day. Without your sweet inspiration,
everybody. It's Tuesday night. It's 7 p.m. on the left coast, and it's time for the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. This is Tammy Jackson welcoming you to an hour of sweet conservative inspiration. If you'd care to do so, interact with comments and questions on Twitter during the show, and you can follow me at Tammy J, T-A-M-I-J. Now, I'm trying to find my first guest tonight, who is Stephen Hayes, and he is the president of FairTax.org. We haven't found him quite yet. I'm thinking perhaps we should take a break, go find him, come back, and get going with this, because I have a great, great... Okay, we found him. Steve, are you there?
I am. How are you? I'm sorry about our travels here.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. I've got you now. I'm excited. Let me introduce you further to the listening audience. You've been on before. It's been a little over a year, I believe. And this is Stephen Hayes. Steve Hayes graduated with honors from the University of Arkansas and the University of San Francisco Law School. He's a self-described recovering tax attorney, spent considerable time and resources investigating alternatives to the income tax. Based on his research, including interviewing tax practitioners, business owners, employees, and economists, he determined the best solution was to eliminate the income tax, boy, I like the sound of that, and the IRS, and replace them with a national retail sales tax collected by the states. He's appeared on radio and television shows everywhere. He's published numerous articles in newspapers, magazines, etc. Speaks to groups of citizens all over the country about why we need to eliminate the income tax and the IRS. He's the chairman and president at FairTax.org. Steve Hayes, welcome back to the show.
Wow, it's a great pleasure to be back with you again. It has been about a year, hasn't it? I remember with fondness our previous show, so it's great to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. And it's fun because though it's a struggle, I think Trump and his folks are trying to push our country in the right direction. And it's amazing how much just obfuscation there is from the left and some kind of diehard people that are in the swamp to any kind of change that might really help us taxpayers.
It is a very, very difficult job, I think, for anybody up there. I mean, I did an article for last week, which we send out to about 400,000 people, where I was pointing out all of the people who were leaving. I mean, the jobs that they had in D.C. Some of them, you know, like Mark Prater, who had been with the Senate Finance Committee for a number of years, he was making $170,000 a year, which when you consider all the benefits and everything, that's a substantial amount of money. Well, he moved to a lobbying company, you know, a law firm that does right. lobbying, I'm sure at a huge raise. And it's the same one Dave Camp is now at, I believe. And this is a revolving door because these people have absolutely no incentive to make it a different tax system. For example, you know, Mark is I've met with him over the years. He's a very nice man. But what value would he necessarily have if we got rid of the albatross of the income tax and simply had a national retail sales tax, a fair tax? We did not have a tax on any individual except when they'd elected to make purchases, because that's all the fair tax would do. You make a purchase, you pay the tax. he has created, along with his other colleagues and with the members of Congress and a lot of the swamp, this incredibly complex and very, very obtuse system, which has a value for people like him because he supposedly understands what they meant to say. In other words, what they really meant. Not what they said necessarily, because what they say is oftentimes so confused that you can't really figure it out, but what they meant to say. So he has a great value. But if there was a simple tax system, then he's a nice fellow, but his value would be incredibly diminished because you wouldn't have, like the last quarter of last year, the lobbying firms in D.C. had their biggest quarter in history lobbying this latest tax revision.
Wow.
And all that would be gone. You know, it would not be there if it were simple and if it were the fair tax, because 99% of the lobbying on the tax law would be gone. So I think that when you look at it, and you see, and there's a whole list of them who have decided to leave, their members retiring, and retiring in Washington, D.C. doesn't mean what it means to you and I. When somebody says they're retiring, we think people going fishing or, you know, whatever. But in Washington, D.C., that means that oftentimes they're getting a raise of multiple times their congressional salary to stay in D.C. and to work at a lobbying firm. And that's just become so endemic that it's really, really difficult for them to actually look at changing that. And the only way we're going to get it changed is with people like yourself exposing them and people like me talking about it and letting people know that all of this stuff benefits only a relatively small number of people in D.C.
Right.
And it was, you know, really interesting to me when I looked at the number of organizations that were lobbying against increasing the standard deduction for a married family to
$24,000. Wow.
To most of us, we would think, hey, that's really cool if we can find a way to do that. That means that people have more say over what they do in themselves. In other words, what they spend on that first $24,000, whatever they decide to spend. It's not what the government tells them, that if you spend it this way, we'll subsidize you a little bit. You know, we'll give you a little benefit. And so you looked at some of the people that were against it, and some you would expect, like the National Association of Realtors, spent a ton of money lobbying against it. Why? Because instead of having 30% itemized, which is what you have to do to get the home mortgage deduction, you're probably going to have anywhere from 8 to 13% itemized. And what that means is that a huge block of people will no longer find that they have to buy a home in order to save some tax dollars, because their home that they would have bought would not have an interest, mortgage interest, more than $24,000 a year. Another group that was opposed was, if you can believe it, the National Catholic Bishops Association or something like that. And they thought that it was going to reduce charitable giving, because if people, you know, in other words, if you took this big swath of people out of the economy who had to itemize, that a lot of people wouldn't make that $4,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever end of the year donation to the Catholic charities.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, it's like this whole idea that you have to have a government stick in order to have people be charitable. Now, over the years, I have been on panels with leaders of the charitable associations and all of them, and they get up and they argue forcefully that they need the charitable deduction and the fair tax. Without the charitable deduction, well, they just don't know how that would work. And I sit there and listen to them, and I ask them if it is still true that the charitable giving, you know, for the 50 years preceding my conversation with him, it had been about 2% of GDP. And in the last 50, you know, probably 70 years, it's been somewhere between 1.8 and 2.2%. And so I asked him, I said, what would account for that? Because you had tax rates that were 65, 70%. And you had tax rates that were 28%. What would account for it is that when people have more money in their pocket, they tend to be more generous.
Yes.
And when people have the choice of how they spend their money, they tend to allocate it in ways that they believe are right. And if you're so inclined to be charitable, you're going to give more money to charity. And this is very frustrating to them because so many of them have argued that they have to have this deduction in order to survive. And frankly, the truth of the matter is most of the monies that were donated to charity were not deducted, even during these last 20 years, because so few people actually itemized compared to the number of people that, you know, made donations to charities. So it's just a huge system. It feeds on itself. There's probably not, you know, 10,000 people in D.C. that run it, that really profit from it. And 300 million of us have to pay the price because we're stuck with a very, very bad system. And President Trump, I know what must have happened. I mean, he went into office with these tremendous ideas.
Right.
He hates bureaucrats.
Right.
Because he's had to deal with them. But he was told, sort of like the Reagan deal, you know, the old Reagan deal with Tip O'Neill was, I'll let you spend money on defense if you let me spend money on social programs, which means we're going to bust the budget.
Exactly.
Because Reagan did bust the budget, but that was it. So I think what happened is McConnell and the other guys said, look, we'll let you appoint the judges you want. We'll let you cut regulations. But if you try to mess with our little sweet wagon we're pulling here, we're going to not go along, and you're going to be a president that never got anything done, and you'll be a one-term president. And, you know, so if you want to do something, you need to work with us.
Wow.
And
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I've been talking too much, but I really believe that's what's going on.
Yeah. No, I wanted people to hear this. This is great stuff because we're talking about a behemoth. The IRS is huge. It is beyond what was probably envisioned with the 16th Amendment. And it is beyond, as far as I'm concerned, constitutional. Plus, I really pretty much think it's immoral because we are disincentivizing industriousness and saving, et cetera, as opposed to if we had a fair tax, then we would be taxing consumption, not the industriousness. So there's a lot of people.
Yes.
That it would be fairer to you. Think of the older person that's on this little budget, and they don't buy that much. They've already got their home and everything. So they will not be taxed on that much because you're not taxed typically, I believe, on a lot of the living things and the food, what
right.
have you. So it would be fairer to the elderly. It just seems to me that it really, really makes sense. But we're up against this behemoth system that has its tentacles in everywhere and in so many people that it's a tough sell that way. But if we could start getting people to understand what is going on with all this, and that's one reason why I wanted to have you on. I want people to start thinking about this and to be informed and to be educated, because heaven knows they are not going to learn it in the government schools. And a lot of people do not understand the tax system. I believe a lot of accountants don't understand the taxation system because it is so convoluted. We're going to be talking about this more after the break with my wonderful guest, Steve Hayes. The Tammy Jackson Show is sponsored by Robart Companies. They are a true custom firearms. They're a firearms finishing shop. They're located in Phoenix, Arizona. You can find them online at robartguns.com. Now, I every week I try to highlight something a little bit new about the company. I love this company. Work with them and write for them a little bit, do a number of different things. So I was really pleased when they wanted to sponsor me here. A lot of folks do not know the relationship between Robart Companies and the Scout Rifle. Now, Robbie Barkman, he was the founder and first owner of Robart Company prior to GM Lieutenant Colonel USMC retired Freddie Blish buying the company. Robbie Barkman built the Scout II rifle for Colonel Jeff Cooper. A lot of you know who Jeff Cooper is. Last year, Robart built Michael Bain from the Outdoor Channel a Lion Scout that he used on a hunt in Africa. It was became pretty famous. And right now, Robart is working on a heavy scout. Jeff Cooper called it a Dragoon. And it will be introduced, it will be chambered in a 375 Ruger, and it will be introduced a little later this year. So I want to whet your appetite for that. I think this is really exciting. They've got a lot of things coming out this year that I'm very, very excited about. So while you're waiting for the Robart Dragoon, if you need your worn firearm to have new life, a new finish, etc., check out robartguns.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
The 405. Shop Amazon. Support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
I love Tammy.
I love you back, Kurt, because I'm a caring kind of gal.
The Tammy Jackson Show.
I'm just one conservative gal encouraging you to keep fighting the good fight.
Tammy is what conservative insurgency is about.
Tammy Jackson, the granddaughter of legal immigrants.
In Honduras, they had 60,000 murders per 100,000, or something like that. And I thought, whoa, that is a lot.
Like every other person on the block is dead.
Tammy Jackson, the emerging threat from the West Coast.
Tammy has made herself into a rising radio star.
When we have these mass amounts just suddenly pour into the United States, we have a worse problem than we already have had with assimilation.
The Tammy Jackson Show, Tuesday nights, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, only on the 405media.com.
Anything for you, Tammy.
The 405.
This is Mike from the Wrestling Mayhem Show, the show where we get fans and people in the wrestling industry together to talk about pro wrestling, WWE, NXT, WrestleMania, all kinds of fun. It's a podcast party. Check it out, Wrestling Mayhem Show, right here on the 405 Media.
Listen to the Wrestling Mayhem Show, now 7 nights a week, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, right here on the 405media.com.
The 405.
Let's talk tech. Tech news discussions from the people in the industry right here in Pittsburgh. Online, gadgets, startups, and more. Check it out at awesomecast.net.
AwesomeCast. It's all about tech and it's all about gadgets. It's AwesomeCast, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the 405media.com.
405. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tammy Jackson, joined by my guest, Steve Hayes. If you're just joining the show, Steve is the chairman and president at fairtax.org. We're talking about that awful, heinous topic, taxes. Steve, you have an interesting post that I read about, oh, what was the day? On May 25, and it's titled, and for anybody wondering, you need to go to fairtax.org. He does a post about every week, and you can find the archives there. But this one is titled, "The Fair Tax Does Not Reduce Purchases of Goods and Services." You start that with, "When the fair tax is explained to many audiences, it is easy to see people thinking of the impact on their family if items were increased in price by 23%. Since most in the audience are on a budget, the prospect of suddenly paying that much more is very concerning." Well, Steve, I share that concern because I am on the tiniest of budgets. So explain, tell us why the fair tax would not be that burdensome.
Well, the fair tax, I mean, let's, you know, kind of back up a moment. And I think this is something that Washington tries to make us lose sight of. But anytime you have a tax of any kind, whether it be a gasoline tax, whether it be a property tax, whether it be a sales tax or an income tax or Social Security, you're reducing the amount of money that you and I have to consume. So a tax is always on consumption, because if the tax is $10,000 and I'm making $60,000, whatever you call it, I only have $50,000 left to use to consume. So every tax is really a tax on our consumption. There's only two ways to tax. One is prior to consumption, which is what the income tax and the payroll tax does, Social Security. And by the way, the payroll tax is the very most regressive tax that we have, because it starts at $1. It goes up to $120,000 now, but it goes up to a part and stops. And it doesn't matter whether you have one child or 20. So if you want to look at regressive taxes, that's the most regressive we have. But if you look at what happens now when a family goes out, and let's say they have a family, and the example I use, they had is a family that had two children, and they largely are going to eliminate their income tax under the new law because of what they are able to do in terms of a standard deduction of $24,000 plus the child credit, but they aren't going to eliminate the payroll tax. And even if they're employed, it's going to be 7.65%. And that's going to happen regardless. You're going to pay that. And you may end up paying a little bit of income tax depending on exactly how it falls through. But for most families in the $50,000 to $60,000 range with two children, they're going to pay very, very little, if any, income tax because of the child tax credit, which is a direct offset to taxes owed. Under the fair tax, the first $32,000, I'm rounding off numbers here, Tammy, but the first part of the purchases that they make for anything are tax-free because you've received a prebate, meaning you've received a tax credit for the taxes on that $32,000 you spent for that same family of four. So that way you've got absolutely no taxes due. Now on the balance, and let's say it's a $58,000, I think that's the number I use, that's the national average income. For the balance of the $26,000, they would end up, if they bought new goods and services, they'd end up paying taxes, which would put them in the range, like let's say they had my numbers off the top of my head, but let's say that they were going to pay $4,000 in payroll tax, it's a little bit more, they'd pay an extra $1,000 or so in fair tax. So it'd be a little more money that they had to pay. However, if that same family took and used that spending, and instead of buying a new home, they did what 93% of the people in this country do, which is buy a formerly new home, in other words, a used home, like right. I did, you're going to have no fair tax on the purchase. And if you are a family that goes out and you bought, like I did, a used automobile and not a new automobile, you're not going to pay fair tax on that. So my example showed that a family, by their own decision of how they wanted to spend their money, could go from having about a $5,000 tax bill to owing zero under the fair tax.
Wow.
Because they spent their money in the way that made the most sense for their family. And one of those factors probably was that they would save $5,000 in taxes by buying that used car. Of course, buying a good used car economically is much smarter than buying a new car.
Right,
you know,
right.
From the terms of depreciation and all.
Exactly.
But some people want to have a new car, and I think it's great to have a new car. But, you know, you end up paying for it under either system. Under both systems, a new car is going to become much less valuable the day you drive it off the lot. And so what you've got is a situation under the fair tax where people are paying an amount of money today in order to make a purchase because they only have the money they have left over in their paycheck after federal withholding. So for a lot of people, you know, it comes out to be $1.15, $1.20, $1.25, $1.30 to net a dollar. Some people it's a lot more. But it's a situation where the fair tax doesn't pre-tax consumption, meaning take the money out in front. The fair tax taxes it at the point of consumption, and because we only tax new goods and services and retail services, you're talking about a situation where people have the opportunity by how they make their own decisions to cut their tax bill. You can't do that under the income payroll tax. And if that family happened to be a family that was self-employed, meaning they had their own business, they would end up paying basically about $8,000 more under the present system than under the fair tax. So it's a huge, huge advantage to the average family. But the other advantage is this was assuming that prices stayed the same. There is almost no way that prices are not going to go down, Tammy, under the fair tax, because you're talking about taking out all of those built-in cost increases attributable to the payroll tax that all the employers have to pay, and to the income taxes they have to pay, and to the cost of preparing those income taxes they have to pay. All of that has to go into the price of whatever good they're selling.
Exactly.
Whether it's the person who's cutting your hair, or the person that's repairing your car, or the person who's growing your food, you know, and then putting in the chain of production that goes up to the grocery store. Everybody has cost. And you could start looking at, you know, the guy who drove out to pick up the produce to deliver it. You know, the tires that he bought were made from by people who had a plant that made tires, who had employees, who had costs. All of those things are in. And conservative, and a most conservative estimate is 10 to 15% of the cost you pay. Of that dollar you pay for that item, at least 10 and probably 15%, and some people say a lot more, is attributable to cost of the tax system. You eliminate that, and competition is going to drive that price down.
Right.
And so you're going to have a situation where you're going to see prices come down, maybe 10%. Maybe some of the people are right, and it's going to be 15 or 20%. But they're going to come down. And
yep.
When they come down, you and I are going to benefit because our $50,000 in today's dollars suddenly, forgetting taxes now, just in spending power, if they come down 10%, we now can buy $55,000. That's like getting a 10% raise.
I know.
If they come down 15%, you know, you get $7,500.
Yep. Yes. Well, Steve, I mean, we could probably talk for hours because this is pretty interesting and there's so much to it. And we've run out of time. And I know. It goes so fast. My guest has been Steve Hayes. He is the chairman and president at fairtax.org. I encourage everybody, check that out, fairtax.org. Check out the archives there where he puts up something once a week on different topics. There, he does it all year long. That's how much stuff there is to talk about and to inform and educate yourself on. Steve, thanks so much for taking time to be on the show.
Tammy, it's a pleasure always, and let's not make it a year this time.
Yeah, I'll have you
we'll
back
do it sooner.
I'll have you back sooner, you bet. Take care.
Thank you so much, hon. Good night.
You're welcome. Good night. You're listening to the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I'll be back on the other side of the break with Timothy Shea. The Tammy Jackson Show is brought to you by Camera Security Now. Camera Security Now sells and installs surveillance and access control systems for businesses worldwide. Their turnkey surveillance and access control systems provide excellent management control tools going beyond the obvious safety and security benefits. A site-wide surveillance system is the most cost-effective way to provide instant access to all the visual information that's critical to your business. Camera Security Now can handle your largest surveillance projects while still providing easy-to-reach personal service. They have upfront pricing. They have remote access to your surveillance systems with no monthly fees, same-day virtual site visits, etc. For more information, visit CameraSecurityNow.com or call 800-440-1662. That's Camera Security Now, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You're on the 405.
Shop Amazon, support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
Whoa, a new digital music player. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, I'm glad you like it, because I can't wait to toss the big stereo. And now that we got your dad that big HD TV he wanted, we can throw out our old TV, too.
Hold up. You can't just throw out electronics.
Really?
They need to be recycled or donated.
And how would we do that?
It's so easy, Mom. Today, recycling electronics is just as easy as buying them. GreenerGadgets.org has all the info. We just enter our zip code to find a certified recycling center nearby. There are thousands of them, and new ones are being added all the time. Some of our local stores are even certified recycling locations.
I like that.
Did you know that some of the stuff in our old electronics could be used to make new products and conserve natural resources?
Well, okay then. Let's gather them up. What was that website again?
GreenerGadgets.org. We just enter our zip code and go.
Children are at greater risk than adults from contaminants carried by floodwater. Since they dehydrate faster, they need to drink plenty of fluids. If the safety of your water is in question, either use bottled water or bring tap water to a rolling boil for at least 1 minute, and let it cool before use. You should also keep children away from mud and make sure they don't play with anything that may have become polluted by floodwater or sludge. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
We are a bold and active voice for the unborn. We are Audio Girl Ministries, saving the lives of babies by helping moms in crisis pregnancies get past the crisis. How? Free ultrasound imaging so the woman can see the life she's carrying, and by supplying her with essential baby items, diapers, clothes, food, crib, car seat, all given with a loving and caring heart. Want to help? Log on to audiogirlministries.com and make a tax-deductible donation. audiogirlministries.com. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Tammy Jackson, and I'm a little over halfway through my show here on the 405. Now I'm joined by my guest, Timothy Shea. Timothy Shea has been active in GOP politics deep behind enemy lines in the Northwest for over 40 years. But better than all that, Timothy is a good friend and a frequent guest on the show. Timothy, welcome back to the Tammy Jackson Show.
Thanks, Tanny, but I'm in the Northeast. You've got the Northwest covered. I got the other quadrant covered.
You are in the Northeast. That's right. They're both blue. It's kind of like a mirror situation going on.
Well, you know, actually, though, again, if you look at the county level map, most of Oregon is red. Most of New York State is red. It's these darn cities. It's these darn cities with all the illegals voting that are skewing the numbers.
Yep, the urban centers are driving us to destruction. So we're trying to put a halt to that. Timothy, there's just been a little bit going on of late.
You know, Tammy, this has been fantastic because the last time you had me on, you asked me to bring your guests up to speed a little bit, to introduce them to the whole QAnon phenomenon. And we knew on March 8th that this deal was done.
Yes.
So for us, it's been just watching it all happen, watching the media react, because most of the media thinks that it's all quote unquote news, and it's all scripted. It's all been laid out. You know, you don't do a deal like that in a couple of hours. Come out with a 4-point letter translated into Korean and English, and you agree on it in 4 hours. Come on.
Yeah, no way. Now, before we get to Little Rocket Man, I call him LRM from the DPRK, but I want to...
The notorious LRM.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that great? I want to talk a little bit, because this leads into it, about an article, which is fantastic, that you shared with me. It's by Cheryl Atkinson. It's at her site, CherylAtkinson.com. It's titled, 50 Media Mistakes in the Trump Era, The Definitive List. Everybody has to check this out. It is phenomenal. And it starts out, we, the media, have fact-checked President Trump like we have fact-checked no other human being on the planet, and he's certainly given us plenty to write about. That's probably why it's so easy to find lists enumerating, examining his mistakes, missteps, and lies. But as self-appointed arbiters of truth, we've largely excused our own unprecedented string of fact-challenged reporting. The truth is, formerly well-respected top news organizations are making repeat unforced errors in numbers that were unheard of just a couple years ago. Are repeat mistakes involving declaring that Trump's claims are lies when they are matters of opinion or when the truth between conflicting sources is unknowable? Taking Trump's statements and events out of context, reporting secondhand accounts against Trump without attribution as if they're established fact, relying on untruthful, conflicted sources and presenting reporter opinions and news stories without labeling them as opinions. It goes on, and I want to talk about some of these. This article is tremendous, Timothy.
Well, it is, Tammy, but let me just interject here. First of all, I have nothing but the utmost respect for Cheryl Atkinson. And for people who don't know, she was spied upon by the Obama administration. She wrote an incredible book about it, and it's all documented. She's had it documented that they were hacking into her computers. They hacked in to James Rosen's computer. They hacked in to a New York Times reporter's computer. And Cheryl is dedicated to one thing only, and that is the truth. She is a true journalist. She's hard-nosed, and she is driven by a passion for determining what the truth is, regardless of where the chips may fall. Whether it falls on the Democrat side, the Republican side, because as you and I know, the biggest lie in America is that the political divide is between the Democrats and the Republicans. It's not. It's between the elite and the people.
Right.
And Cheryl is being incredibly generous by calling these unforced errors and mistakes. Okay, I'm a little more jaded. They're neither unforced errors nor are they mistakes. Okay, Chris Cuomo knows that he is pumping out a false narrative every night. Jim Acosta knows with every skewed question that he asks that he is pushing a false narrative. Rachel Maddow, all of them, they all know that they're lying to the people under the guise of quote-unquote news. So Cheryl has documented 50 incidents. There are many more than this, but these are her top 50, not her top 5, not her top 10. But read these 50 times when not only did the media get it wrong, but they were clearly pushing a false narrative. Because here's their strategy. It's like what they say in the law. Once you throw a skunk into the jury box, you can take the skunk out, but that stink remains. You know, you can't unring a bell.
Right.
And what else do they say? The lie is halfway around the world before the truth gets its shoes on.
Yeah.
So, and that's their strategy. We lead with the lie, and retraction doesn't get noticed, and people remember the lie. People still think that Sarah Palin said that she could see Russia from her house. That was Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live, and people still swear up and down that Sarah Palin said she could see Russia from her house. So, yeah, fake news is a real problem.
It is a real problem. You and I know this. A lot of Americans across the nation know this. But the width and the depth of the problem, Cheryl, really shows in this article. I'm just going to hit a few of them, and you bring up any of them you want. But number two is October 1, 2016. There's a bunch of them leading into the election of 2016, which is fascinating. She writes, "The New York Times and other media widely suggested or implied that Trump had not paid income taxes for 18 years. Later, tax return pages leaked to MSNBC ultimately show that Trump actually paid a higher rate than Democrats Bernie Sanders and President Obama." Man, we all remember that kerfuffle, don't we?
Well, I remember that kerfuffle, but I also remember Harry Reid saying that Mitt Romney didn't pay taxes. And then when he was confronted about the fact that Mitt actually had paid taxes, Harry Reid, it was after the election in 2012, and Harry Reid smugly and snidely looked at the man and said, "He lost, didn't he?" Reid knew he was lying in the well of the Senate about Romney not paying taxes. They don't care. Any means to an end.
Yes.
By any means necessary. That's their motto. The ends justify the means, the most immoral rationale there is. That is the Democrat mantra.
Yeah, and it's the leftist mantra. It absolutely positively is. It's one of the foundational differences between conservatives and the left.
It is. And when I say Democrats, the Democratic Party died on the streets of Chicago outside the 1968 Democrat National Convention because the radicals that were arrested outside the convention in 68 were on the convention floor as delegates in 72. And that's when the communists basically took over the Democrat Party.
Yes.
And today's Democrats are not your grandparents, you know, old school union JFK Democrats. They're just simply not. These are leftists that hate America. These people hate America. That's what fundamental transportation or transformation was all about.
It absolutely was. It's interesting. So the phrase that they hate Trump more than they love America is so true, because a lot of them do not at all love America. Think of Michelle Obama, the things she said about when her husband was elected. For once, she was finally proud of her country. Oh, my goodness, the greatest country on God's green earth, the greatest force of freedom in the history of mankind as far as governments go. And she said something like that. You must be kidding me. And she was the first lady of the United States. That's heinous. Absolutely bad.
Think of Bill Maher last week saying he was rooting for a recession. He doesn't want Trump to get credit for a good economy.
Yes.
He wants people, because a recession's not going to impact Bill Maher.
No.
He wants rank and file Americans. This is the big lie, that the Democrats are all about the underdog. He wants people that are struggling paycheck to paycheck to starve and to suffer in a recession economy while he's sitting pretty and eating steak, because he doesn't want Trump to get credit for good jobs numbers.
Absolutely. It's just like the people that want gun control. It will not affect them. They've already got security details and high fences and walls around their palatial estates. They don't care about gun control very much because they're not worried. It's the average person that would be affected.
Absolutely. And we could decode all 50 of these, because this is a great article. I really want people to go and read it. But we got to get onto this summit, because this is unbelievable. You know, President Trump could raise someone from the dead, and the Democrats would complain that he's contributing to overpopulation.
That's absolutely about right. At the very beginning of this, who was it? Oh, Newt Gingrich said, every day, the Democrats, the leftists, the socialists, the Marxists, they wake up and they say, I know Donald Trump did something horrible. What is it? And that is literally what the media and everybody on the left is doing, because the media is nothing more than the working arm of the Democratic Party.
Well, I was going to say, and I can't blame the media exclusively. You've got Nancy Pelosi criticizing the president for elevating Chairman Kim's position in the world by meeting with him. It's like, oh, like Obama accomplished something? Okay, here's the deep, ugly secret. The Democrats were using North Korea as an operating base. North Korea was a puppet state. Okay, they took out three generals. We knew this in March. March 8th, Q posted, the strings have been cut. The deal has been done. Iran next. So we knew North Korea was done in March and that they were working on Iran, because Saudi Arabia was first. They cut the CIA strings in Saudi Arabia. And what did we see? We saw a purge, and all of the problems in Saudi Arabia went away. And then Armenia. Q told us on Wednesday to look at Armenia, and the following Monday, the prime minister resigned, and all of the hacking went away. Same thing in North Korea, and now they're working on Iran. Okay, the Democrats were the problem in North Korea. They were, not only were they not part of the solution, John Kerry supposedly cares about POWs and MIAs. And here's a guy that, as Secretary of State, did absolutely nothing. Dennis Rodman, and I just said in my Decode video on Facebook, God bless Dennis Rodman. You know, here's a guy made a lot of mistakes in his life, but admittedly went over to North Korea as a basketball player, didn't know the political situation, but he saw an opportunity, as he put it, to bring on the Chris Cuomo show on CNN, to bring some love into the world. And he came back to death threats for that. And Dennis is a passionate guy. And he broke down in tears talking about having to hide out in America for 30 days with security and death threats that he got for having tried to bring peace out of North Korea. And President Obama completely brushed him off. President Trump embraced Dennis Rodman and embraced this opportunity. And 15 months in, look what we have. We've got the complete denuclearization of North Korea agreed to. We have immediate return of all identified POW MIA remains.
Yes, which is fantastic.
And a commitment, so immediate return of those, which John Kerry didn't secure, and a commitment to look for more. So any that are found are going to be returned. You know, we've got a four-point plan already 15 months in. The Democrats didn't solve North Korea because the Democrats didn't want to. Madeleine Albright and Bill Clinton gave North Korea nuclear technology because they wanted a client state there. So what happened was those three generals were taken out, and all of a sudden, all the black hats have no access to Chairman Kim. It's no joke that President Obama tried to call Kim and did not have his current cell phone number.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Chairman Kim has a new cell phone number. Obama had the old cell phone number, and Obama has no way to get the new cell phone number. The strings have been cut.
Wow. Wow. And by the way, I just have to say this, since I have no love for John Kerry any way, shape, or form, because I have so many friends that are veterans, and they pretty much consider him an absolute traitor for what he did during Vietnam. I don't believe that he would ever have an ounce of concern about the MIAs and the POWs and bringing their remains home. I really don't.
None whatsoever. I've said it before on your show. I have had several encounters with Secretary Kerry in Boston, and I grew up, my cousins ran the Democrat Party in Syracuse, New York, and we were part of the Republican Party. And I've seen politics from both sides. Okay.
Wow.
I've known politicians on both sides of the aisle. Some are good, some are bad. And again, this isn't a Democrat versus Republican thing that's going on. Look at all the Republicans that are not running for reelection in the next cycle. There's a reason for that. Okay. This isn't D versus R. This is good versus evil. John Kerry is the only politician from either side of the aisle that I've ever met about whom I have nothing good to say. Now, granted, I haven't met Chuck Schumer and I haven't met Hillary Clinton.
So they could be in the running.
I think we've got a triumvirate here, Tammy. But I will tell you, with repeated interaction with John Kerry, I have nothing good to say about the man. Not a thing I can say about him either personally. You know, somebody you could say I really disagree with him politically, but he tells a great story and he's a great guy to have a beer with. Okay, Kerry is one of the most obnoxious, supercilious, self-important SOBs I've ever met in my entire life.
Doesn't surprise me one whit. The guy that doesn't know Lambeau Field, the guy that took Sweet Baby James over to France as part of his diplomacy to sing.
The guy that ordered Swiss cheese on his Philly cheesesteak instead of Cheese Whiz.
He does it. The guy that wears his spandex to windsurf and just a number of things. You know, Trump at that rally in the last few months where he was making fun of him for whatever, riding his mountain bike and getting hurt. And, you know, 70-year-old men shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I love the president on Twitter, and they think that, you know, he's this drunken boob on Twitter. Well, first of all, President Trump doesn't drink. He's never taken a drink as an adult. He's a non-drinker. He's a teetotaler.
Yep. Doesn't do drinking, drugs, none of that.
But he's socialized with a lot of drinkers, and if you don't think he's picked things up along the last 40 years, you've got another thing coming. So, but they think that he's just randomly tweeting this stuff out and he's a buffoon. They don't realize that all of these things are carefully orchestrated. Okay, misspellings matter. He drops in one tweet today, he dropped when he talked about Robert De Niro, he said he's taken too many shots to the head from real boxers and two was just T.O. Well, there was a missing O. Right? That is important. Yes. He's saying that Obama's been taken off the table. That's the decode of that. There was another one where he spells missile M-I-S-S-L-E instead of M-I-S-S-I-L-E.
Right.
And then he said it was stopped, S-O-S-T-O-P-E-D. There's a missing P. Well, I-P. Okay. There are codes in these things, and these are all strategically planned out in advance. And if you read his Twitter feed, there are themes that he addresses, and he hops back and forth between subjects, but you can see that he's generally proceeding in the same direction. And these aren't random, and he's not a lunatic. It took me a long time to figure this out, but the man is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, kind of a rope-a-dope situation. And it's interesting because he did say something in an interview in the last 24 hours where he said he felt a little silly tweeting something or a little something tweeting something. And the implication was I needed to write this and I knew that it sounded a little silly, but I needed to get that out there.
He needed to get it out there. And all of these things, you know, the left is, again, it's like he's got a laser pointer and the left are just a bunch of cats, right? Grab that yellow dot, Fluffy. Oh,
yeah, it's squirrel big time.
Maybe next time.
Yes, I know.
And that's what he's doing with his Twitter account. And you've got all these people, you don't conduct world diplomacy on Twitter and calling him Little Rocket Man. And well, guess what? North Korea doesn't have internet. Most of the people in North Korea didn't even know that Chairman Kim went to Singapore to meet with President Trump. So now all of that stuff on Twitter doesn't matter because he wasn't belittling Kim in front of the North Korean people because the North Korean people never saw it because they don't even have internet. Yep. What they're going to see is Chairman Kim coming home saying, hey, guess what? We're going to have the same prosperity that literally, because they're not ethnically different people, literally our cousins and uncles and aunts and brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers are experiencing in South Korea. We're
exactly
going to have the same prosperity. Look at what I've done for you. He's going to be a national hero in Korea.
Yep. And if we've all seen the satellite images of North and South Korea at night. I've heard from inside sources that Kim Jong-un actually admires and is a little bit of a fanboy of Donald Trump because he likes capitalism, the opulence, the materialism, and all that. And he wants to be the guy that ushers in an era of opulence and at least some kind of economic success to North Korea. That he wants that to be
absolutely.
And I believe that.
Where did he stay? He stayed at the St. Regis in Singapore. Where did they have him tour? Sheldon Adelson's Marina Bay Sands, gorgeous three towers that are all connected at the top with the 72 floors up. There's a whole roof garden. It's a water garden on top of these three buildings, these three towers that are connected that overlooks Marina Park. And Trump showed him all the opulence, the limousine, the hotel, the $32 breakfast. Do you know the average salary in Korea, North Korea, is $32 a month? And that's how much the breakfasts were at the St. Regis Hotel. And it was the president telling him, look, we will do, America helps people out. Look what we did for Western Europe after World War II. Look what we did for Japan after World War II. Look what we did for South Korea after the Korean War. We will do the same thing for you. He's offering the people of North Korea prosperity in exchange for peace. Why? Because it's the right thing to do.
Yes, and the very, very interesting thing is that Trump will help facilitate this, but Kim Jong-un is excited because he is the one that in his
country... He's going to get all the credit.
He will get the credit. He will go down in history as this is what he did, unlike his father and grandfather. Granted, he's done some horrible, horrible things, but he is now...
But I still
he's
think
being,
that was the military. I don't think that came from Kim Jong-un. I think that was the military.
Very well could be.
Oh, go ahead.
But I think he's being wooed by the good side of things.
There's no question about it. Did you see him with the Weefies and all the pictures and, you know, smiling?
Yes.
And he was, look, nice things are nice. I don't know anybody that doesn't like nice things.
Yes. But it also, it reminds me a little bit of Schindler and how he was very pragmatic. But in the end, he was wooed by the right stuff. And I think that this is what's happening with Kim Jong-un. This whole thing was historical, Timothy.
It was absolutely historic. It was absolutely historic. Tammy, I had the same vibe that I felt when the Berlin Wall fell.
Yes.
Okay.
This is phenomenal.
I had a fun meme. It was the president shaking Chairman Kim's hand from the side, so you could see both of their hairstyles.
Right.
And I tweeted, I captioned it, "Grandfather told me, always trust men whose hair is jacked up as yours."
Oh my God.
And I said in my post, there's a lot of ancient Korean wisdom there.
Oh my gosh. On that note, we come to the end of our time. Timothy Shea, thanks again for coming on the show. As usual, it's been rapid fire and fun.
Always a lot of fun, Tammy. Thanks for having me on.
God bless. Hey, thanks for listening to the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. We'll be back next week with more great guests. Until then, this is Tammy Jackson reminding you to wake up. Do not be silent. Let your voice be heard, because you and I, we have a country to save.
I cut my teeth on the back of an old church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of light and truth. And I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preach what I should and I should not do. And the choir sang. I tried to be a good boy, but I ain't a boy no more. That a man just can't ignore. And this world's gonna see what I'm standing for. I've kept my peace, but I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't buy my silence. You can't steal my voice. You can't keep me quiet. I will break the noise. Try to beat me down. Shut my mouth, but there's a time to speak, and the time is now. Oh, 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 oh.
can't buy my silence. You can't steal my